Click it.
Hi, Juan. How are you?
I'm doing well, Susan. How are you doing?
Great. It's so great to talk to you. I've been looking forward to this for sure.
Me too. I think that we think alike, we speak alike. You know, we both kind of tell it like it is. So I totally relate to a lot of things that you talk about. I'm always nodding my head. So yeah.
same with you. And, you know, I was thinking, I feel like you're my tough love sister, you know, because we both tend to go down that road a bit, you know, and we'll talk about that. But first, if you could kind of just give a brief background on you, you know, so we can get to know you a little bit more and kind of how you ended up where you are today.
Sure. Yeah. So I have always been interested in fitness. You know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s where, you know, it was always like cardio based type things. And so I was always into kind of like being active, but I really never got into a true progressive overload strength training program until I was 44. So later in life, probably kind of like yourself. Mm-hmm. But until then, I was mostly into like endurance sports and cardio, too much cardio, in fact. I left my career as a pharmacist to run a business. I opened something called DexaFit. It's where I did DEXA scans, metabolism testing, VO2 max tests while I was growing my coaching business. And then last year I sold that business so I could do coaching full time. So it's always been kind of like a passion.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds phenomenal. So you did a lot of DEXA scans and stuff.
Oh yeah. Thousands.
Yeah. Wow. 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 And that was just your business, just doing DEXAs?
Yeah. DEXA scan, resting metabolic rate tests and VO2 max cardio tests. But the primary, I would say the majority of my business came from doing DEXA scans.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. They're very popular for sure.
Yes.
For sure. You know, it's interesting because you and I post a lot about women and building muscle, right? And we both see the same things. And I would love to hear kind of your perspective on maybe the biggest issue, why women struggle with this, because you know, there are many and we can talk about a bunch of them, but just kind of what comes up for you first when you hear that?
Like you said, a lot of things. I think impatience is one of them. Just expecting these you know, muscle to appear all of a sudden, like out of nowhere. And, you know, I think, I mean, I always try to hammer the message home that building muscle takes a long time. And it's really hard to get bulky like women imagine themselves getting when they start lifting weights. So impatience, I feel like not eating enough to support their goals, always dieting, and always doing more cardio-based type workouts, not true progressive overload strength training where you're working to really get stronger over time. What else? Maybe poor exercise selection, poor programming, just not, you know, not training with enough intensity, you know, not pushing themselves hard enough, not lifting heavy enough, and just inconsistency too, just hopping from one thing to the next and not really sticking to the same program to give themselves an opportunity to truly progress.
Let's talk about a couple of those. The first one in particular, when you were talking about, or I don't know if it was your first one, but it wasn't your first one. You were talking about eating enough to support goals. And I feel like that's a biggie, right? It was a biggie for me. I mean, I've put out there, when I went through a particular surplus phase, mm-hmm. that I spent the first month and a half just bullshitting myself about, oh, I'm not hungry to eat extra calories, you know, blah, 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 blah. And once I got over that hump and just said, you know what, I just got to do this, you know, then of course you start seeing some things happen. But I feel like that point is spot on. I mean, I feel like women are scared to see the scale go up, you know? And so we convince ourselves we're not hungry. We can eat 200 more calories. Come on. We all can.
Oh, totally. Totally. You have no problems eating extra couple of Oreos, you know?
Right.
It's really not hard, but you're right. I think there's a mental block there because deep down inside, there's a fear of gaining weight, fear of seeing that scale go up. So they kind of try to talk themselves out of not being hungry. But yeah, I forgot, it kind of ties into not eating enough is the fear of the scale going up. Seeing that scale going up for a lot of women is very petrifying. And that is, I think, a huge hindrance. It really stalls progress because, I mean, if you want to build muscle, like it takes up space, it weighs something, it's got to go somewhere. So the scale is going to go up and it's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, I mean, for a lot of women, you know, actually having more muscle on the frame where they're going to weigh more, they actually look better. They actually look leaner and tighter. So trying to disassociate that higher number with a negative thing is a struggle.
It really is. And, you know, it's interesting. And in fairness to people, especially my age that, you know, for decades, we've tried to get the scale to go down and now we're trying to get it to go up. I mean, that's just a mind. It messes with your mind so much. So in fairness, it's not easy. It wasn't easy for me either.
Oh yeah.
But it's something that has to happen, right? You can't sit there and say, well, I'm just going to eat this little bit of food and hopefully I'm going to build muscle too. You know, it doesn't work that way. And I like to say to people that, you know, you can always go back into a cut if you really want to do that, you know, but you don't have to either. I mean, I didn't. I looked at myself at the end, like, you know what? I'm carrying more body fat. I can eat different things. I can eat in a different way than I could when I was leaner. I kind of like this, you know. Did I have to buy a different size in a couple of things? Yeah, you know, I did. And I think that can be a trigger for somebody, right?
Who's absolutely.
I mean, yeah, totally. Just the clothes thing.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and one of the things I do encourage women is to size up, to let the clothes fit you. You should not have to fit into the clothes. And a lot of times finding clothes that fit you better actually is more flattering and it's more comfortable. I think it looks better than trying to stuff yourself into something that doesn't fit. But that's really a struggle for a lot of women because they don't want to say that they have to size up. But honestly, no one knows and no one cares, and you probably would look better and you're definitely going to feel better wearing clothes that fit you, that's more flattering, you feel more confident in it, you know? So yeah, I've had to size up too.
Not to mention how screwed up women's clothing sizes are anyway, right?
From
one store to another. I went into one store at our local mall here and I swear to God, she said this, she says, oh, and this is when I was at my leanest. I'm going to go get you a size zero. And I'm like, I've never worn a size zero in my life. Like I was born bigger than a size zero. And she starts laughing and she goes, oh, well, welcome to blank, blank, blank store where you walk in the door and you drop two sizes. You know, it's just like,
oh, wow.
So that plays right into our fear, right?
Yeah.
So people will go to that store because the numbers will be lower, you know,
that
pisses me off because that is just perpetuating the whole problem.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can definitely go into three different stores and wear three different sizes, you know? So I don't, I used to be, and this is, you know, I mean, I struggled with this, you know, when I was younger, I didn't like getting a bigger size, but as I've matured and, you know, gotten smarter and more wise, like now I will just truly focus on the fit. I don't care if there's three or four sizes down that are smaller. Before that would bother me. It would bother me if I was not a certain number. But now it's like, you want it to fit you. You want it to look good. So it doesn't matter. So trying to get women to buy into that, it is hard. It's hard. But it's one of the things I kind of talk about once in a while too.
Yeah. I just feel like if something fits you properly, you will look better. I mean, you'll look probably the way you want to look, you know, instead of the punishment of forcing yourself into clothes that don't fit. And I used to do that years and years ago as punishment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I didn't do what I was supposed to do. I'm not buying new clothes.
Right.
I'm making myself wear this pair of jeans that does not fit me, that I'm miserable in and that I look terrible in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's what we do to ourselves. And that, boy, that is not something that you walk in a room, flip the switch and that goes away. You know, that is unfortunate.
It takes time.
Yeah. It takes a lot of time, but you have to stick your toe in that water. You have to at least try, go and get another pair of shorts that maybe a size up or something that fit you and just see how much better you feel.
Exactly.
The second you put them on.
Exactly.
You know, and to all of this brought me back to the first thing you mentioned, and you talk about this a lot, and it's part of the whole kind of overseeing the whole journey thing. And that is, it takes years. It's the word years. You use that a lot. I use that a lot. And I don't know about you, but I post these before and after kind of pictures, and people are always asking me how much time in between the two. And I'm like, I don't know. All I know is you can measure that in years, because I don't know, right? I wasn't paying attention to that. That wasn't part of my concern at the time. And I think that is something that we both are trying to get out to everybody. Like, if you're expecting to see these changes in a month, man, you're setting yourself up.
Huge. Yeah. Big time disappointment. Yeah. I think the most successful people are the ones who remove a timeline. When they don't have a timeline and there's no sense of urgency, that's when you can really progress. And that's when you can really truly enjoy the process. And it goes by, honestly, it goes by in a blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. People are just so used to having like instant gratification that the thought of something, doing something more than a year, it's mind boggling to them. So I tell people, and it's not to burst your bubble. I'm not trying to tell you this to make you feel depressed. It's actually, it should give you like, you know, kind of like an encouragement, like, you know what, this is gonna take a long time. So let's just, you know, put our head down and get to work, because time is going to pass either way. So you can either complain that it's going to take too long and never get started, or actually do something about it and then look back a year from now and see how far you've come along.
Yeah. And you know, who cares how long it takes?
Yeah.
Like, what is the rush to this anyway? If you think about it, there's, you're not going to look better because you did it faster. You're not going to feel better because you did it faster. None of that will happen. And you know, there's no prize,
right?
Like, it's not like you get a first place prize if you get there fast enough.
Exactly.
There's nothing to that. And I've told people this many, many, many times, that piece of advice that you just gave is getting rid of timelines. If you can get that burden, that weight of a timeline off your shoulders, your life will change.
Yeah. Like
it is life changing to get rid of that, because now you can enjoy life. Now you don't have the pressure to perform you know, meet these unrealistic little mini goals that you set for yourself. You know what I mean? You take a big breath and you can actually be present and enjoy your life.
Yep, absolutely.
It's incredibly life-changing. And it's something I feel like it took a while for me to embrace, but when I did, everything changed. You start seeing the scale move a little bit more. You start enjoying, God forbid we don't enjoy what we do, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you start to enjoy everything. And I think what one of the big issues with all of that is allowing emotion in, right? And I know you talk about that too, as I do, allowing emotion to kind of run the show and what that does to us.
Exactly. Yeah. I think there was one post of yours. You said something about emotion in the driver's seat or something like that.
Yeah. Driving the car.
Really resonates. Yes. And it's true. Like, when you let emotions get in the way, it's a guarantee that you're not going to progress. Right. And it's with anything else too, like, you know, getting emotional about the scale, getting emotional about, you know, not being motivated, right? Motivation is very fleeting. So it's like not letting those feelings get in the way of what you need to do in that moment. So it's not always going to be fun or convenient, or, you know, you're going to have to do it anyway. So trying to step back and not let the emotions get in the way.
Yeah. It's you know, and I like to tell people it's okay to feel emotion. It's not about not having emotion, but it's about not allowing the emotions now to dictate what you do. And that's the example that I use with the fat loss or the weight loss car. You know, when you allow emotion to become the driver of the weight loss car, you know, instead of nutrition, which needs to be the driver of that car, you know, nutrition just has you going straight towards your goal in that car. And when you allow emotion to drive, emotion's telling you to turn left because it's a shortcut, or you screwed up. You should have, you know, don't go straight, you know, go left. And if you go with emotion and go left, you're lost, you know? And I think people see that. And again, after decades of being emotional about stuff like this, it's not something that is easy. It's very uncomfortable, you know? I'm speaking from personal experience, very uncomfortable to not let that dictate. I feel like there's some sort of safety net in that. It's because it's what we know. Maybe that's what it is.
No, exactly. It's all we've known. It's comfortable to feel like that. It's comfortable to turn to that and react in response to that. So it's trying to rewire our brains to doing something different. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, especially when that's all we've known for literally decades for a lot of women. So it takes time. And I think I tell people it's okay to acknowledge that you are feeling these things, but you still, you know, it's okay. It's okay to be afraid to do something, but don't let that stop you from doing. Have emotions, right? I mean, we're not like totally robots, but to let it dictate what we're gonna do, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. How do you like to work with people on that piece? I feel like that is, as coaches, that is probably the most challenging part. Yeah. Is to deal with that, right? Because that's clouding everything, whether it's the scale, whether it's you know, afraid to eat more because of the scale, afraid to try new exercises. You know, it can bleed into everything.
Mm-hmm. I encourage my clients to weigh as frequently as possible because, and I know you have a reel on this, which I thought was fantastic, but the more data points you have, the better, because yeah. Then you can see it's a learning experience of how your body responds to different things. Like maybe if you, you know, ate later at night, or maybe it's during your menstrual cycle, or, you know, you had more carbs that day. So you understand how your body responds. And hopefully you can step back and look at it a little bit more logically. You know, if the scale spiked, okay, what happened the day before? Oh, you had some alcohol, or you were on your period, things like that. You know, when these topics come up, you know, I try to reason with them and look at the data to see like what's going on, and let them know, like, logically, you are not in a surplus. You're not eating in a surplus. So this is not fat, you know, and trying to help them understand that it takes time. You know, a lot of these, it's, you know, trying to help them understand why the scale can fluctuate and how it's not fat.
I think too, some of it stems from lack of understanding what the scale's weighing. Mm-hmm. You know, in our head, it's just weighing fat. That's it. Right. But it's also weighing muscle. It's also weighing liquid. It's also tendons, organs, skin. I mean, it weighs all of us. And so when someone tells me the scale is such a liar, that it's so fickle. No, it's actually not fickle at all. And no, it's definitely not a liar. You know, you think it is because you're thinking it only measures fat, right?
Right.
And I think that the education piece on the scale is where it's a problem. And in fairness, again, you know, my generation, it was all about if the scale went up, that's bad. And if it went down, that's good. That's all the conversation there was about it. I never knew anything about scale fluctuations until I started working with Jordan, you know, 7 years ago. I didn't know. I didn't know what that was. So, you know, you have things ingrained in your head.
Yeah.
But again, it's one of those things. That's why weighing every day, as uncomfortable as it may be at the beginning, I think it's a great thing to have all these data points to look at, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Cause you know, then you've like, if you just weigh in only once a week, then so much pressure is on that one single weigh in, and you're missing all the, maybe the lows that might've happened in between. So, the more data points that we can have, the better we can look at the whole picture. And also looking at other things like pictures and measurements, you know, that all puts in the bigger picture.
I think too, you know, if you weigh once a week or once a month, you've created an event, right? It's now a big deal.
Yeah.
It's weigh-in day coming up. You know, I weigh in on Mondays and it's weigh-in day. And the thing that, and I think I mentioned in the reel too, that when you create that event, now you've created pressure to perform so that when you step on that scale on that day, you want the scale to give you the number you want. And if you feel like leading up to that, that you are not on track with that, you're feeling soft, you're feeling yucky, whatever, you're going to start to manipulate what you do. You know, you're going to severely restrict, add more cardio, do whatever it is you need to do to get that scale to say what you want it to say on weigh-in day. you know, and then you've gotten into some unsustainable behaviors. Yes. And then you're pissed because it starts going up again because you can't maintain anything. So it's kind of this thing where which one is more uncomfortable, to keep having that happen to you or just step on it every day?
Yeah.
You know, and record the number and take a step back out of the minutia of day to day and start looking at a broader picture, you know?
Yeah, and I think people will also be pleasantly surprised. Sometimes they, you know, I've had this happen many times with clients where they've had like maybe something extra to eat that they normally don't eat. And then the next day they step on the scale and it's actually less, you know, and they were expecting it to be so much more.
Yeah.
So you learn these things. You realize like having a day where you eat extra is not going to, sometimes it just won't impact the scale at all. So that's an eye-opening experience for a lot of people. They're like amazed, you know, so it's yeah. trying to decondition them from associating, you know, eating more with like assuming that the scale is going to go up, and then assuming anytime the scale goes up, it's fat. Like it could be, it's water most of the time. Right. So,
yeah. Day to day is about water and glycogen. That, I mean, that's day to day because no one's eating, I shouldn't say no one, but most people are not eating enough calories on one day to gain a pound of fat the next.
Right. You know,
that's just not what's happening, but it is water and glycogen, and that sorts itself all out, you know?
Yeah.
But again, it's stepping on the scale, taking your data points, and then learning what your body reacts to. It's been an eye opener for me.
Yeah. Me too.
You know, it's crazy. When we order like Chinese takeout, 2 pounds the next day, guarantee you. You know, guaranteed.
Yeah.
I never even thought of that before, but it's like a big deal. I understand that now though, you know, it doesn't drive me crazy, but it's such great information. And then you stop letting it have power over you too.
Right.
Which I think is super, super important for the long haul, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Cause I think, you know, too many people allow it to dictate what they're going to do. So the sooner there's so much freedom in letting go. I mean, you know, and we talk about it like it's so easy. It isn't easy. And for me, it was like literally decades of undoing and unlearning different thought patterns. But when you finally get to that point, it's like a weight is lifted off your shoulders. You're just like, you know, like, gosh, you live your entire life worrying and stressing about that when you don't have to. And I would love for women to get to that point.
Amen to that. That's where it all changes. And the cool thing is, it's not too late to change, right? I mean,
that
doesn't really matter how old you are now. It's as long as you're willing to dip your toes in the water and get uncomfortable, you know, I mean, it is going to require you to get to be uncomfortable a bit. Then anything's possible, which kind of brings me to people in my age bracket, your age bracket. I mean, you're kind of in the next one down from me. I still got a bunch of years on you. But in both of our age brackets who want to have not really trained before, not trained that much, who want to start, you know, building muscle, and they usually come with, I want to lose fat and build muscle at the same time. There's a lot of that going on, right now. How would you address that with somebody who says they want to lose weight, but yet they also want to build muscle?
I first got to look at the overall picture and I ask them what their primary goal is. I mean, for some people, when they're newer to lifting, they can get newbie gains, but they could lose fat and put on muscle and recomp pretty well. But for a lot of folks, after they've been at it for a while, you know, it's better to just pick one goal. What is your primary goal? And I do look at overall health goals, health conditions too. Like if we need to lose weight, because you have some, you know, medical conditions, then we're going to address that first. Identifying what your primary goal is and then taking the necessary steps from there. A lot of people want to have their cake and eat it too, and that's not the way it's going to work for most people, especially when it comes to building muscle and losing fat. It's usually, you know, best tackled in separate goals, ideally.
No, I totally agree. I think they're a very small group of people that could conceivably see progress in both areas. But for most people, I feel like they get, when they want to do both, they get confused. Well, how much do I eat? Do I eat to support this? Do I eat to support that? do I lift heavy here and just, or do I not? And then just focus on, you know, I mean, they don't know what to do. And I can see that that's really confusing. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree with you. If you want to do both, and let's say you have 20 pounds, 25 pounds you want to lose, let's focus there. Let's focus on that. Let's get you into a weight loss or fat loss phase with a nice modest deficit, protein, all the kind of stuff. And while you're still doing that, you're still going to train like you're building muscle, right? And I think that's the key.
Exactly. You're right. No matter what your goals are, whether it is fat loss or a dedicated building phase, strength training should be at the foundation of it, no matter what, because you're going to have, even if it's fat loss, you're going to have better results if you lift weights while you do this. And I talked about this recently. You know, a lot of people think, well, I'm going to lose weight first and then I'm going to start lifting weights. Like, they have these separate goals. No, do them at the same time, because you're going to have much better results. You're going to look better too. You're going to look more toned, you know, more firm. So having that, no matter what your goal is, strength training should be the foundation, no matter what.
Yeah. I feel like, people can build some muscle while you're losing weight. Yes. But it's not optimal, and it's not something you want to live your life doing. You know, it's not something that you're going to be able to see, you know, big time results with, you know. So doing one phase while you're lifting, like you're building muscle, and then maybe bringing calories back in, hang at maintenance, get used to that, continue to build muscle, and then maybe even dip your toe into the surplus thing. And, you know, kind of taking us back to where we started with the whole nutrition piece and adding calories back in and the fear of the scale and all that. If there's one message, I want to hear what yours would be too, but if there's one message I want people to understand with that is, you know, we're not talking feeding frenzy on bringing calories back in, right? It's not a feeding frenzy. It literally could be a couple of hundred calories. And I'm sorry, but I could go upstairs right now and do that and not even think about it and not be full. You know, I mean, it is not hard to do. And when I was going through this, I know Jordan and I did a podcast about this actually. And we came up with a strategy that ended up working for me, where I ate in maintenance all week and I picked 3 days, and it ended up being 4 days, I think, where I just had a smoothie on those days. So I kind of ate in maintenance, which I knew how to do. And 4 days a week, I made a smoothie and I didn't track calories. I think it was probably anywhere from 300 to 450 calories, something like that. You know, you add in all the stuff and it adds up, and, you know, smoothies don't fill you up. I mean,
no, they don't. You know,
you drink it and you're full temporarily. And then about 30 minutes later, you're like, okay, I got to go pee, you know?
Exactly.
But it's get over that hump, whether you're going into maintenance or whether you're going into a surplus, you know, get over the, I can't eat, I'm not hungry to eat, you know, all that kind of stuff. How about you?
Yeah,
what do you
think? Yeah, it's a mental block for a lot of women, especially if they're so used to under eating, they're not used to actually eating like what maintenance calories should be like. It's very foreign territory. Maybe, you know, they mistake extra food volume with fat. They think it's fat because all of a sudden, like, there's, you know, their stomach is probably a little bit more distended than usual. But trying to get over that, and also giving them strategies on how to change their food selection too. Cause a lot of women are so used to eating diet type foods that are low calorie and low volume. So having them make that mental switch of eating more calorie dense food and less volume is helpful, and having them be able to get in more calories without feeling like they're gonna blow up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I would love to see more women try a surplus, actually. I mean, I like to tell everyone, get used to being in maintenance first.
Yes.
You know, get used to that. And you can still build muscle in maintenance.
Yeah.
We talk about that in the Inner Circle a lot. But optimally, you want to be in a surplus. I mean, you just do. And I know I saw that you did a post not too long ago about, you know, growing glutes. And I have to say, the first time in my life that I ever grew glutes was about however many, 2.5 years ago, when I was in a surplus, you know.
Yes.
And it was not a large surplus, but it was enough. And
exactly.
I feel like that you know, that's the issue. But women are too scared. The word surplus and the word bulk. I hate that word.
Well, you know, you made a good point about, I think there's a misunderstanding of what eating in a surplus is. Like you said, people assume that you're having like all this extra food, but it's really not much, not that many calories. You know, mm-hmm. it's easy to get that a little extra. And you're not, the point is not to get fat. I mean, we don't want to get excessively fat. It's just a little bit extra food. It's almost like if you're trying to invest money, it's you're going to be able to grow money when there's actually money in the bank versus mm-hmm. it's always drawing even, or, you know, of course, when you're, you know, in the negative, it's you're not going to have much luck trying to build muscle. But yeah, having that extra calories is very helpful. And, you know, I loved, there was a period of time I had been in a surplus, and it's mentally, can be a little bit challenging, but yeah. it's very empowering too. Like to know that you are doing this is something that a lot of women struggle to do. But I feel like that is when I made the best progress too. That's when I made the most, you know, muscle gains. You know, you can always go back and shed the fat. We are masters at shedding fat. We're like experts at dieting. So that's really not going to be a problem, right? Where we know how to do that. So trying to do the things that we are most uncomfortable doing, I tell people that's what you got to step into. The thing that you're running away from, that's probably what you need to do the most.
Yeah, I totally agree. So bringing this fold before we get cut off here, because we're going to get cut off here probably. What are your like three top tips you would give women regarding muscle building? Three things for them to really focus on for some successful muscle building.
Well, number one, to be eating enough. So whatever, like if you have to hire a coach, so to figure out what your calories should be, you gotta be eating enough.
Yeah.
Number two, get on a good progressive overload strength training program. So where you are progressing with your lifts, you know, and stick to that program for 4 to 8 weeks before switching it up. Don't be bouncing around for this program into that program. You know, trying to change things up and doing too much. I mean, just stick with it. And number three, sleep and honor your rest days. I think too many people ignore the importance of sleep and recovery and think that they need to train 6 to 7 days a week and do 20 different exercises and ignore rest days. Like your body's not going to grow if you do that. So you got to give it ample sleep, rest days. I think that would, I mean, I have other things too.
Of course.
Yeah, it's hard to narrow it down. And then there's other mindset things too, but I think practically those are like three actionable things.
And I love the last one in particular, because so many people think more is better, right? More exercise. Well, if one workout a day is good, two a day must be even better, you know, and also the importance of rest and sleep, right? I don't know about you, but I get some people just don't believe that I lift 4 days a week. That's it. I lift 4 days a week. That possibly can't be true. And when I post what I do, it's like, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes Jordan gives me two sets of something, but I better be busting my ass on those two sets. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's about intensity.
Yes.
That you bring. But I love the fact that you brought up rest, because I think in sleep, especially, because I really feel like that is kind of an under talked about factor with building muscle. Like if you're always stressed and you're not sleeping and you're constantly trying to work out hard and your chin, you know, you're just dragging all the time, your tongue's on the ground, dragging around, you won't build anything.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's really hard, but we live in a society that's more is better mentality.
Yeah.
When really less is more in a lot of things, especially when it comes to wanting to build muscle.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Well, I feel like you and I could talk for hours here. And I think what I want to do is I want to make this with you. I'm going to title this Juan Part One, because I want to definitely do a part two with you.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you.
Where we don't have to, I'll fix this timer thing, whatever. so we have more time to really sit down and get into the meat of a couple of things, because a couple of things popped in my head as we're talking. But let everyone know where they can find you and where they can connect with you. And please, you guys, you need to go see Juan's content, because her content is phenomenal.
I appreciate that, Susan, very much so, coming from you especially. So I'm very active on Instagram, so you can reach me at Juan D Wellness, so that's WOND Wellness, or you can email me at juan@juandwellness.com.
Love it. Love it. Love it. We will see you on Instagram. And if you feel like, if anyone out there feels like they need a little push or a little tough love, go to Juan because she's your girl. And, you know, I mean, and I'm her big sister. Cause I'm a tough love girl too. You know, y'all know that already about me though.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much, Juan, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You and I will talk off air about scheduling a part two.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.